My full name is Matthew Minicucci. Writer is probably less arrogant than poet.
You're based in Illinois then?
Yes.
Champaign?
Champaign.
Okay. Did you grow up in?
I did not, actually. I grew up in New England. I grew up about 20 miles north of Boston. I was always very interested in writing, but mostly reading rather than writing. My father, at a really early age, gave me a lot of books as gifts rather than sort of other things. And when I went to college, I studied classics. So I actually was translating Greek and Latin. So I never really thought of writing in creative writing as anything but something you did sort of in your free time when you were sad in your room listening to sad music. And then after sort of graduating, I realized that those themes that were really present in classics kept sort of inspiring me, and I kept writing about things related to my own life and things related to what I had read. And finally, I decided to take a couple of workshops. I had never taken a workshop before. My first, I think, was age 26. It went really well. I decided to apply to MFA programs. And I got into school at the University of Illinois, and I loved it and never left.
People might think of poetry as being sort of a dated art form, but the Shelter Belt Creative Writing Series has been good at obviously bringing in contemporary poets. You're a living, breathing person.
I am still here.
but also people who are, you know, kind of on the younger side.
Sure.
Do you have a large peer group, though? Do you feel alone in the world of creative writing when it comes to poetry?
Yeah, not at all. That's actually that was the strangest part about not only coming to an MFA program. I think the hardest moment is graduating from an MFA program and then being by yourself again. Because you can imagine, like, for example, at the University of Illinois, the poets and the prose writers are well taken care of. We get a chance to teach. We get a chance to take workshops, work on Ninth Letter, which is an amazing magazine at the university. But then you go back to being just a regular person. No one's funding you. No one's giving you money to write. So you have to sort of re-engage. But that was a lonely moment. But you suddenly realize that in all the professionalization, you meet all these people at conferences. You have friends who are publishing.
And so you mentioned your background studying classic literature. And I take it that probably plays some role in your poetry. What else do you draw inspiration from?
Oh, that's a great question. A lot of inspiration actually drawn from my family. In fact, the first book is a lot about classics, but only through the framework of the sort of dissolution of my nuclear family. I'm a child of divorced parents, so a lot of the book is about that. A lot of inspiration from both religion and science and sort of the interaction of those things. The next book, which is coming out in fall of 2017, very much is talking about the interaction of what we have faith in, sort of what we draw that particular knowledge from. So a lot of that, and relationships, of course. I say to my students often, I think maybe every poem might actually be a breakup poem. We're just breaking up with different things.
And so you mentioned that you are a transplant from the East Coast.
I am.
And so I just wondered, does being an Illinois poet, a Midwestern poet, does that color your writing at all?
That's an awesome question. Yes, it does. Very strange that you'll see. So in the book, that just came out in September, my first book, there's a lot of images of oceans. The sea, the ocean comes up a lot, but it's not that ocean from back home. It's a lot of this ocean, by which I mean this wide open space. It sort of fascinated me when I first got here. I was a bit agoraphobic, actually, when I first got here. I was like, it's so wide open. Like, it's not big sky country, but it is. It felt so big and wide open. And so you see that image sort of occurs a lot. I'm always reminded of, like, Mark Strand, you know, in the field, I'm always the absence of the field. That's how I felt when I first got here, and I think I still feel that way. So yeah, it definitely shows up a lot.
There's this sort of culture shock. I'm from the area, but even just an internship in DC for 4 months coming back,
sure,
I wasn't expected to feel so different driving home through the cornfields.
Absolutely.
It's definitely a different experience. Do you think it's important, though, to share those sort of stories with people? You know, we kind of are flyover country, and when you think of art, you know, music, visual art. I'm assuming even creative writing people might poo-poo it in a way.
There is. And I think one of the advantages maybe in creative writing, at least in the academy, is that Iowa was always such a famous place for writers. There's still that argument that people have of the MFA versus New York argument. My response to that is wherever, you know, like it doesn't have to be one of these two things. But yes, many people, when I first came to Illinois, were confused why I came, and they were confused why I stayed. But they've never been here. They never came to visit, right? They know of Chicago, right? Like if you drew the map, they'd be like, it's Chicago is like most of the Midwest. And then there's other stuff that no one really knows about. But I think I actually consider myself a Midwest poet now. I've lived as an adult here for almost 10 years. When I lived in Massachusetts, I was a kid, and then I was a college student. And I feel far more related to sort of my surroundings than I did then. I think it is important to talk about. And I think with Ninth Letter, I just got a chance to edit an online version of our magazine that did all Midwestern poets, or all poets who identified in some way as Midwestern. Either they had gone to school here or were from here. Poets, writers, prose writers as well. And it was amazing stuff from people of all kinds of backgrounds. Very, very diverse. I was very excited.
All right, so it's my pleasure tonight to welcome the poet Matthew Minacucci to the Shelter Belt Reading Series here at UIS. Matthew is the author of the collection Translation, which was published last year by Kent State University Press and chosen by Jane Hirschfield for the 2004 WIC Poetry Prize. Please help me welcome Matthew Minacucci.
Welcome to a world where no one knows what you're talking about. It's a good place to be. I'm going to start out with a poem called The Lilac and the Bee. I was just a boy when my mother was born again. Arms open like wings, triumphant in each step away from me. I was just a boy, you see. I couldn't run very fast, couldn't chase down her car like the dog we left to bay in the kennel. It was a good death, the week the lilacs bloomed each year, like mayflies that only find romance in flight, only catch our eye when they fall. Some things live for years below the surface. Some buds find the perfect shade of purple on a late April day, and some I rip off and cut and shape with a penknife until green switch becomes wooden sword. It's play, you see. It's preparation for the real thing. Lilac is soft. It dents and chips at even the slightest threat of violence. You should know that lilacs are my mother's favorite flowers. The buds, small fragments of the whole that smell sweet, hide brambles and bumblebees so large you could swap them with a baseball bat. And it was an offering to her each May, the small glass vase, the water, and the stems. Once my mother found a bee floating in her vase, and she dropped it, freed the bee to float downstream towards my chair. Get rid of that horrible thing, she told me. She didn't know I had put it there, because I thought the flower would live forever if a bee remained to guard it, pollinate it, to nest deep inside of it. It's easy to catch a bee. You just slap it to the ground and then hold it between your thumb and forefinger until the struggle stops. I didn't understand. The body of a bee is so much like the body of a boy. Tiny wings, warning colors, hours spent on the smallest bodies of water, a hand-dug pond, a puddle in our sidewalk. Such a small body on the surface of such a small body needs no boat. It can never get lost or be overtaken by waves. It's always right out front, floating, held tight in the dying folds of a lilac flower. And by tomorrow, the dark petals will have washed away. The bees moved on to a rose bush by the garden, cone flowers planted in the neighbor's garden. But the soft stems of the lilac bush, flowerless until it warms and then cools and then warms again, will call to the neighborhood boys to cut and rip them away to fashion swords or spears or any other manner of playful weapon.